Center.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Friday morning. Day off for the Mariners yesterday. Mercifully. I guess we all needed a break. They'll get back to it tonight. And then, of course, Seahawks football on Sunday. Back home for the first time in forever. Gosh, that part of it is not really, like, sunk in. It took a while to kind of get used to the fact that there weren't fans at the games. And then I kind of got used to it last year. And now, all of a sudden, it hasn't seemed weird. There was a while I thought it was going to seem a little strange to see fans at the game. Like, I remember at some point during last baseball season, I saw like a clip of a home run hit into, I want to say it was in San Francisco, and the crowd going crazy. And I was like, whoa, that looks like too much. I don't think I could handle that. And then as soon as they all came back, I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm perfectly.
No more cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, I got used to it very, very quickly. And yeah. So, you know, I don't know how much we've really talked about that. And I know for a lot of people, the idea of getting back to the game and being there on Sunday, that's what Seahawks football is to a lot of people.
600 and I want to say like 11 days or something like that since we've had fans in there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That it's been, I mean, it's legitimately a full 2 years, right? I mean, that's, so yeah, great to, great that that will be returning to normal or at least something close to it on Sunday. Yeah, there'll be some differences. I do want to remind people and remind you now, like you do have to wear a mask, so bring a mask with you. Masks are required at all times except while actively eating or drinking, regardless of vaccination status. It's required for any large event by the state. This isn't a Seahawks decision. That's a state decision. So if you're going to the game, bring a mask. Don't forget it. I'm sure they'll have some around, the paper masks. In the meantime, for vaccinated fans, you can show your CDC vaccination card. You can show a photo of it or a digital version on your phone. You can bring a printout or a digital version of your Department of Health vaccine record, or you can update it to the Clear Health Pass app. So if you go to Clear, the Clear app, you don't have to pay for it. I know you have to pay for it at the airport, but you don't have to pay for the app, and you can upload your vaccine card to Clear, and then you can just do it that way. So if you're vaccinated, you can do that. If you're unvaccinated, I hope you've had your test, or if not, get it done now. I know Lynwood offers, like, results within 2 hours. So if you're struggling and you haven't gotten it done yet, go up to Lynwood. You can get a COVID test there, but it has to be done, and you have to have a printout copy or an email or digital record or something on your phone to show that you were negative. So
the Clear Me app, by the way, it's clearme.com is where you can go learn about it.
Because okay,
for people who are like, oh, I've heard about Clear, I'm not sure how it works. Like you're right. Does it cost money? I've only thought it was for airports.
Cost money at the airport.
It's for, now stadiums are using Clear. So yeah. That obviously it's been, you've probably seen it if you've been to a game in the last couple of years.
So whatever you need to do to make this easy for you, just want everybody to know, because this is, again, this is Seahawks life for a lot of people, right? I've never been a big tailgate, get there early. That's never been in any part of my life as a kid or anything.
No VIP lounges around there for
you? Well, I do prefer a nice VIP lounge. I'm not going to lie. I've just that was never part of my life growing up. We would go to games occasionally in different sports, but the whole like making a day of it thing and like that was what we did. I don't know. Some people do that. Some people have like we were more of a like be at home, watch the games. You know, in on the East Coast, starting at 1 o'clock, and at that time, I would probably start at noon with the pregame shows and go straight until CBS said it's time for 60 minutes because that's what they do.
Right, West Coast. Yeah, I've never really thought about it because I've only lived West Coast time zones. Like 10 a.m. is always when football starts.
I know. Yeah, so like if you're tailgating or something in the East Coast, there's no football to watch.
Yeah,
which makes it a lot less fun. So it's never really been a big. I think it's a bigger thing here. Obviously, in the South and college football and all that, it's a huge deal. But just been my experience. So, are you holding your breath waiting for the Seahawks defense to suddenly look like the defense that we saw last year? Is that a fear of anybody else that what we saw last week was like, was good, but it was just indie? Like, you know, I've been sort of making jokes about Paris Hilton or whatever the guy's name is that they were playing. Paris Campbell, excuse me.
It's Paris Hilton. Paris you Campbell. Had me too. I was like,
well, I combine Paris Campbell and T.Y. Hilton, and you end up with Paris Hilton, right? Those are like two of their wide receivers.
Yeah.
All right. So this made some sense. You know, I can make jokes about those guys, but this week you're going to see Julio Jones. You're going to see A.J. Brown. I mean, like, those guys are legitimately stars in the NFL, right? Last week, I know everyone wants to tell me Jonathan Taylor's good. He is. He's a good running back. I like Jonathan Taylor. Kind of hoped he would come here, quite honestly. Like, he's a good player, Wisconsin. He's not Derrick Henry, right? I mean, like, for everybody in the running backs don't matter crowd, and that's a big crowd, and I'm there with you. I've always been in that, like, for a long time. I get it. But I think the running backs don't matter idea has been, it's like a game of telephone, right? Where one person said one thing, and eventually we just kept, like, whittling down little pieces of it until the only thing that was left was the phrase running backs don't matter. But that's not the whole quote. The whole quote is most running backs don't matter. Elite running backs absolutely matter. And by the way, so do those at the other end of the bell curve who are terrible, right? If you have a running back that's not good enough, it matters. You see it in the game. You remember when they had Julius Jones here? You could tell that it mattered. When Eddie Lacy was here, mattered, right? Like, when you have a running back that can't do it, it matters. They're going to move Eddie Lacy to guard, I think, if he played here another year. I mean, like, you know, when you have a running back that can't do it, it matters. If you have an elite running back on the other side of things, it matters.
Derrick Henry.
When you have Derrick Henry, trust me, that's a big deal. So, you know, I think it's easy to kind of look at where the Seahawks are and be like, hey, it was an unbelievable week and this and that. And then you kind of like, all right, well, the defense was always a concern. I like what they did against Indy. But how much easier was it? Were these cornerbacks gifted a week without anybody that could really beat them? Without a quarterback that could really beat them? Right now, I don't know whether Ryan Tannehill is a star, but he's a capable NFL quarterback. He's taken his team to the playoffs, won games. He's a capable NFL quarterback. Not elite, but definitely capable in a way that Carson Wentz might not be.
Well, and that goes back to last season, right? I think we were all... We thought the defense got better down the stretch, but there was that little bit of hesitation. Like, well, it was Colt McCoy and Dwayne right. Haskins and John Wolford and Goff with a broken thumb. So we're hoping, like, yeah, that second half defense was good, right?
It was pretty good. Yeah, they got to the quarterback. Carlos Dunlap was good.
But there's a little uncertainty.
There's definitely some uncertainty. I liked your we were trying to come up with a good metaphor for this. Mora had a good one, essentially saying that, like, if you make some home repairs at home – like, you fix a chair. Like, I think I've ever fixed a chair. I like that I'm saying this as if it's something I've ever done. Like, you know when you fix a chair at home? First of all, I don't think I've ever really had cause to fix a chair. Yeah. But if I did, I would throw it out and buy a new chair.
You got a chair guy.
All right. So let's say I fixed my kitchen chair in an alternate universe. And I'm like, yeah, that's working. I put some wood glue on there, or maybe some Elmer's. I don't know. Whatever it is you would use to fix a chair. I used a clamp. But you're like...
Yeah.
Man, I hope nobody else sits on this chair.
Yeah, like it's JB welding car parts, and you're like, please don't fall. This is a trailer hitch. This is important.
I'm now lost. What did you say?
JB Weld.
What's JB Weld?
Dude, Maury, do you know what JB Weld is? Nobody knows JB Weld?
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's like cold welding. Like, there's hot welding where you use a torch, and it's hot welding, right?
I know what that is. That's where the sparks come out.
Yeah, well,
you have to use the blowtorch, and you have to put that thing over your face.
Well, there's several different kinds of welding. There's MIG welding, TIG welding, wire feed. JB Weld is it's an epoxy.
Ah, I know what that is.
So you, like, squeeze the tube, and there's two different kinds that come out, and you got to mix them, and then they get really, really, really
hot. I do that all the time.
Hey, big JB Weld guy?
Yeah. No, you know what I did fix? I fixed my dishwasher recently. The, what do you call it? Like, the string, the rope that held the door hinge had broken. I don't know how that happened. They had the dishwasher for, like, 6 years. So, somehow that broke. And so Heather and I were like, all right, we're going to fix this thing. By the way, we work on this stuff together. There's no way I do that by myself. So
a lot of YouTube videos.
That's exactly what we did. We went on YouTube, and people were like, oh, yeah, you can't get to it. I found the part online. I had it ordered, sent to me, right? And so I get it, and we fixed the dishwasher. We did. We got it pulled out, right? We unhooked it, used this, that, and the other. We got it out. We figured out how to get the rope in there, and so far it's held. But I will say that every time I open, I used to, like, kind of throw it open to get all the plate. No way.
Think about it now.
Oh, now I do it very gently.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how we're going to treat the Seahawks defense. Very gently. Make sure that you're putting them in a position to succeed, because they are sort of like the rope that I fixed as opposed to one Justin fixed. If Justin fixed it, you feel confidence. That's the 2013 and 14 Seahawks defense.
I'll take
with
that.
This one, let's just be a little careful with how it goes. All right, we'll talk a lot more about the Seahawks today. I'll ask you guys this question. You can start texting in now. If you could choose one thing that you saw on Sunday from the Hawks to be real, to last, what is the one thing you saw you would like to see last? You can text us at 710-710, powered by Mac and Jack's. Up next, though, Jerry DePoto in a tough spot. His team is now in a really bad place, but he thinks he's got an answer as to what they do next. We'll talk to him coming up in 20 minutes after Need to Know Next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Need to Know.
15 minutes.
That's all right. We can go right into it, or we can wait a moment. I was going to read a text message or two. Technical issues this morning. I don't know what's going on. It's the Friday thing. It must be. Oh, this text always drives me nuts, and I've been getting this one for years, Justin. This may surprise you. Salk, did you ever have a man card? You know, two things. One.
You don't use those terms.
I just think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know what I do that makes me a man? I have a wife. I've got two kids. I'm raising them well. We support each other. We treat each other well. I do the things that it takes to. That's what, to me, it means to be a man.
I would agree with you.
Right? To live your life in a way that is appropriate. Whether you're a carpenter or a computer whiz, or it doesn't matter the things you're good at in life. That's not what makes you a man. And the word man card is on the top five dumbest phrases I've ever heard. Right now it's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Man card. Do you have your man card? You're going to take away your man card because you cried at a movie. Get a life, people. Go to your man cave and your man card. Seahawks are going to make their home debut on Sunday. A chance to build on something special they started in week one. Now, if what we saw last week was real, this is a chance to show that was no mirage. This will be the first week and opponents had real game film to plan for, so that'll be a huge step in determining what really was accurate out of week one, and not to mention a new challenge for Shane Waldron, although I will say I'm encouraged to hear that so many players believe that they've barely scratched the surface. We heard that from guys over the course of this week offensively. As for the defense, to me, that's where the real challenge is. I don't know what they saw from Indy. I think Indy's defense may be good, but that offense likely is not. So what happens when you get to see some real weaponry on the outside? Well, they will get that chance this week, as Tennessee's got a great running back, best in the league, and a pair of wide receivers that can really get open and do some damage. So much bigger challenge, I think, this week for the Seahawks defense. Glad they will be at home. Speaking of that, a year ago, I think it started to become normal to watch games played in empty stadiums. This weekend, Seattle finally gets to make it seem normal to be back in the loudest stadium in the league. Hard to believe. There are veterans on this team who've never played in front of this crowd. Jordan Brooks, Damian Lewis, Alton Robinson, just to name a few. And oh, by the way, this crowd has never seen Jamal Adams in person playing for the Seahawks. That will change Sunday at 1:25. Injury report looks pretty good, although seeing Damian Lewis's name emerge yesterday as a non-participant is definitely nerve-wracking. Some depth issues all of a sudden on the offensive line, and he has been an incredibly steady presence since taking over as a rookie last year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the Mariners pretty much have to win out. At least that's what Jerry DePoto told me yesterday. Now, I think he was referring to series more than games, but either way, the road to the playoffs is going to be an unlikely one. They do remain four games out as New York lost yesterday. Red Sox and Blue Jays were both off. The A's did win. What can the Mariners still accomplish this year? Even if they don't end up making the playoffs, is there more to accomplish in these final few weeks of the season? Well, battling to the end, I think, would be important. I want them to treat each game as a true competitive September affair, and maybe even after they're formally eliminated. Preparing for next year is important, and I know everybody hates the wait until next year line, but I do think that that's kind of where they're at, and it's important to remember that's what they've been doing this year. At no point this year have they 100% gone for it. It's always been a balancing act between trying to make the playoffs and also trying to develop some of their young players. You can argue with whether or not that was the right idea, but I do think that was their plan. Did they try their hardest? No. I don't think they did. Should they have? I still don't think so, but I think it's a debate we'll have later in the show. They'll kick off a series in Kansas City tonight. Chris Flexen against Brady Singer. First pitch at 5:10. Pregame show at 4 here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, every football team gets a hero. last night's apparently was Taylor Heinicke. It was his turn for the spotlight as he helped Washington drive down the field for a late field goal. I don't think he needs to be writing his Hall of Fame speech just yet, but it was an okay performance. Washington did survive an interception of his on the penultimate drive before missing a field goal on what would have been the last play. Lucky for them, Dexter Lawrence jumped off sides really smooth when there's nothing you can really do from that spot to block a field goal. And Dustin Hopkins got a second chance, made the kick. He made it. Washington beat New York in a battle of NFC rivals. Rank the three worst divisions in football right now. How do you rank the NFC North, the NFC East, and the AFC South? The East is probably the best of those three just because Dallas looks like they might be a decent team. But the other three all kind of stink. And then between the NFC North and the AFC South, what a mess. All three divisions, not very good. Those are 12 teams that are all guaranteed to make, or at least three of those 12 teams are guaranteed to make the playoffs. And in the meantime, the Seahawks have to fight it out with Arizona, LA, and San Francisco. Much tougher road. Marquee matchups this weekend, the NFL, Pittsburgh and Vegas, Kansas City, Baltimore, and we will see the Rams take on those Cowboys. Those are three things you need to know.
Did you see, I mean, we hate even saying Taylor Heinicke led them to the game-winning drive because they should have lost that game. Two touchdowns that they, one got called back, one Galladay just dropped. Was right. It Galladay?
I forget.
I think it was Slayton.
Slayton, that's right. It was Slayton. Just dropped.
Do you think he dropped that, the Daniel Jones throw?
It hit both of his hands.
Dude, that was not a good throw.
It hit both hands.
It was a bad throw. I'm not saying that he couldn't have caught it, but should have caught it. No.
All I said,
that's a bad throw.
All what I'm trying to say is I caught myself several times being like, oh, I don't think the Seahawks make this air. And I don't think that.
Well, that's for sure. Right. I mean, the Seahawks are a better team than the Giants.
But a lot of things putting in context after week one, it was really comforting to see.
Everyone gets to come in and say, oh, look at how great Taylor Heinicke is. And I mean, Taylor Heinicke might be fine, and it's cool. He's a cool story. I mean, I'm not rooting against the guy or anything. I think what you love about him is how confident. I loved after the game, he was like, yeah, I should be the starter. And I love that his teammates seem to really support him. And that type of stuff matters as a quarterback. And you are judged on what you do at the end of the game, right? Well, okay, go get after it. Go do what you need to do.
Yeah.
At the end of the game. All right, let's see. Coming up next, Jared Kelnick has been in the spotlight all year long, and for whatever reason, other teams have not treated him like your typical rookie. We'll ask Jerry DePoto why that is and a whole lot more. Coming up next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Such a fun Friday getting ready for Seahawks football this weekend and also trying to figure out what happens next here with these Mariners after the tough two losses in a row to Boston. And those are the circumstances which we talked to Jerry DePoto. He's our spotlight interview this morning here at 6:30. And always great to catch up with Jerry yesterday. I was appreciative that he would show. And, you know, as always, Jerry is a pro. That's kind of how he is. So here's our conversation in the spotlight.
Morning, Mike. The sun came up this morning, ready to go and try to win out here.
Was that kind of how it feels after? I mean, yesterday's a bummer. I know we were all bummed, and we all had that exact same feeling as Kelnick's ball was heading down the right field line, that this could be that exact moment we've all been waiting for, and to see it go, 18 inches maybe, foul to the right side of that line. What goes through your mind in that moment?
I mean, it would have been a huge moment, obviously. And, you know, in retrospect, we all walk out feeling a lot different than ultimately we did. But, you know, it didn't happen. And I'll touch on what we discussed last Thursday, which is these moments, having a chance to go up, take those types of at-bats and pitch the types of innings that our young pitchers are pitching in these situations is just invaluable for our growth. And I think yesterday was too. Disappointing end aside, it was a phenomenal series with the Red Sox. I thought we played, we did. We played neck and neck with them the whole series, and you know that's we're showing ourselves we can, which this team knows.
Did you hear any of Kelnick post game and what he said about that at bat? He really went through his process. Have you heard the sound of this?
I haven't heard the sound, but I'm pretty sure I know what I'll hear.
Yeah, let me play it for you. I'm kind of curious to get your reaction. I thought this was a really fascinating insight into what goes into a major league at-bat, but this was Kelnick talking about his final at-bat there.
We're looking at the scouting report, and when he was ahead in the count, he threw a lot of sliders. And so I was looking for something out over the plate. And really just, you know, my hands are quick enough to react to the fastball and just try to fight that pitch off. I was kind of looking for that hanger that he was going to try to freeze me on. I think he saw me foul off a fastball there and bought me to the next pitch. And then he threw his changeup like 3% of the time. And that 3% of the time, he used it against me there.
Is that what you're expecting?
Pretty much. You know, I think, and 3% of the time, I think the actual number was that was the second changeup Adam Ottavino's thrown this year. So it's good on Jared for putting on a great at bat, for being aware of how he pitches and goes about it. And, you know, Ottavino is about mid-90s and what I think is one of the league's better sliders. And Jared went up there with the right mindset. And a pitcher who's been around, who's had a fair bit of success, saw that he was on him and grinding through an at-bat. And he made an adjustment. And frankly, he threw a pitch that none of us could have expected him to throw. And he threw it really well. So it's chalk it up. I can't even really say it's a lesson learned, because there's no way in that situation you shouldn't do exactly what Jared did. And, you know, it just didn't work. Again, we lost out by a foot and a half, but it's a foot and a half that will do a lot of good for the growth of Jared Kelnick and other players that were involved in that game.
When I hear that and think about a guy throwing just a second changeup all year, and I think about some of the managers that have gone to, you know, their tough lefties in order to face him this season, it sure seems to me anyway that he's gotten he's being treated as if he is already a really good player and a good hitter who's established himself. Is that common for a rookie like him to get that kind of treatment?
I don't think it's common for a rookie. I do think that there's been enough, fanfare around here that was not unexpected. And, you know, he and I have had a conversation where we discuss that. They know who you are. They know where you are all the time. And, you know, and to that point, the umpires know who you are. And, you know, and they're going to test you from time to time and see how far they can push you. And, you know, part of growth as a major league player is being able to adapt to that, to overcome. And to some extent, we all had to go through it. You know, the tighter strike zone, the wider strike zone, the pitchers who are going to throw you breaking stuff until you show you can hit it, and the pitchers who are going to do the same. It's a very unique back and forth for a young player to break in at the major league level, and I think Jared's experienced all of that and then some in his first year.
Jerry, we had John Stanton on yesterday as we were announcing the continuation of our partnership between the Mariners and 710 ESPN Seattle, a multi-year extension to our deal, so you guys will still be heard right here on this station, which we're super excited about. And I was asking him about you and your extension from just a couple of weeks ago, and he had some really nice, kind, supportive things to say about you, unsurprisingly. But one thing he mentioned is that he said that this year, since he had moved into a slightly different role, that you guys talk almost daily. And so it just makes me, what do you guys talk about?
Sometimes we talk about the team. Most of the time we talk about the growth of our baseball organization, how we move forward. You know, I think John, and it comes off this way in his public-facing personality, he's a very good person who loves the Mariners, and he's a fan of our team. So we'll talk about the young players in A-ball. We'll talk about the players at the major league level. We'll talk occasionally about strategy, but that's really not how John is wired. He's more of a big picture thinker. And, you know, those are exciting things for me because, you know, we are trying to grow something, you know, broader in its spectrum than just simply tonight's game. And he's interested in hearing about that. And he's often got suggestions from a managerial or from a business building type of perspective. And, you know, whatever businesses we're all in, we've all, you know, had to manage and deal with the element of people and ensuring their growth. And that's something that's really important to John as well, is the growth of the 160-ish people who work in baseball operations and talking through that. And sometimes we'll talk about wine. So it's, you know, roughly everything in between.
Well, it's something I don't know that people recognize as being something that's an important skill for someone in your job, which is, what did you say, 160 people or so that report up to you. You don't just, you know, have to know baseball and know trades and know free agents and know negotiation. you need to be a leader of people. You need to manage a group. It's not just you pulling the trigger on every trade, waking up one day and saying, hey, let's call the Royals and make a deal. You've got a large staff that you actually have to be a manager for.
And I think that's my primary job, which is something, you know, when I first became a general manager, may not have been the way that I approached it. And, you know, we all evolve over the years. And I think that's the thing that has become a primary focus for me. And, you know, as a player personnel director, you know, back in, you know, 15 years ago, that was a job that I loved because you needed to know your roster, the minor league system, the global baseball, I guess, that pool of players that existed around you. And I still have some of that in my skill set, but now more often I wind up, you know, spending my time on the growth of the directors and department, the managers at every level, the curriculum that we put in place for player growth. Because, it, you know, planting the seeds is really the job. Mm. And, you know, as a result, I spend a lot more of my time with Justin Hollander, with Andy McKay, with our scouting directors, talking about how it's going to grow. And I think I've said this in just this way before, you know, the major league club, throw the keys to Scott, you know, work with the group, build the roster, and then get out of the way and don't get too in the weeds on trying to dictate or arrange for strategy. That's not my job.
Let me read you some numbers, and I'm going to guess that you'll know exactly what these numbers refer to. 42 games, 373 average, 476 on base, 570 slugging for a 1046 OPS, 59 hits, 10 doubles, 7 home runs, 32 runs, 25 driven in, 28 walks, 35 strikeouts, and 14 of 16 in stolen bases. I'm assuming you know what those numbers are.
I believe that may be Julio.
That's Julio Rodriguez since his promotion to Double A. What kind of player is this kid going to be?
I hope just what you just walked through from a statistical perspective, and we're even more impressed by the person. And, you know, you can squeeze in there somehow, manage to slip away twice and join Team Dominican Republic
right.
to win a medal and have a very, what I would call, positive impact on the Mariners, despite the fact that he's not yet, you know, come within a level of the major leagues. He has a vibrant way about him that just attracts people, teammates, that creates clubhouse, I guess, harmony in a fun together type of way. And really looking forward to when he gets here to Seattle. And he is an ultra talented player who, you know, we feel like is right on the doorstep. And it's you know, a lot of what we're doing right now, as you know, is laying the foundation for what we think is a long run of successful, we've called it, you know, sustainable championship rosters here. And we think that's happening as we speak. And we know that Julio is part of that when it starts to really flourish.
We were trying to figure out who he's built like. We had a texter who said maybe he's built like A-Rod. Is that a fair comp for his body type?
Yeah, I mean, it looks a little like A-Rod, younger version. A guy that always comes to mind is, you know, you will remember this, is the young version of Jesse Barfield.
Oh, man.
With the Blue Jays. You know, that really just physical, athletic look. And I'll say this, too, about Julio, that he has done a remarkable job as he's matured. Typically, as players mature, they gain strength. And in Julio's case, he gained strength, and he really toned his body in a different way than we might have expected when he was 16 years old, and which goes to show how gray an area scouting can be. But he actually made himself faster, which is maybe the tool in baseball that doesn't naturally evolve once you get into your 20s. And, you know, he did. He went out and he worked hard on it, and he got faster, which is hard to do.
Jesse Barfield, career 800, 802 OPS. That guy was pretty good. I remember him as a kid. Thanks, Jerry. We appreciate it, man. This is always good to do, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, Mike. Look forward to it.
All right, there you go. That was Jerry DePoto. And so he says, by the way, if you ever miss interviews like that, you can find them at 710sports.com. We post all the podcasts, every minute of every hour is up at 710sports.com, or you can get it at Google Podcasts. It sounds like somebody may be getting it at Apple Podcasts.
I just checked. I don't see it there.
Still no.
I don't know what he's
saying. Benji, my guy Benji, says that he's been getting it on Apple Podcasts. So maybe he's better than us? I don't know. Somehow it should be there.
And maybe he works for Apple and all he has to do is hit approve.
Okay, is there something we can do about this? We're like 2 weeks into the show. I thought Apple was a week. What's going on?
I'll send an email right now.
Is this thank you? Could you call your people at Apple, Justin?
Get them on the phone.
Is this because they're busy launching iPhone 13? Is that why? They have bigger priorities. It's all about the launch.
I think they have more than five employees there.
Got some people. Yeah. All right. Well, head down to, what is it? What's the name of the little town they're in? Cupertino?
Cupertino.
Get down to Cupertino and see if we can get this thing done.
If nothing else, we'll ask the professor. I mean, he straightened DirecTV out.
It's true. And the goons at AT&T. Yeah. I mean, like, John, if anybody would know how to fix this, it's, you know what?
Wait, what is this?
Oh, you don't know about John and the way he battles against the technology companies?
Clayton battling tech?
Well,
big tech?
Big tech, yeah. So, I mean, John is a tech whiz, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I can pick up on that.
He's really good with his phone, his cable, like, all of it. He's a computer guy. He's got the database, so obviously that stuff has to work. And John, was it before the Super Bowl last year? You may remember there was a battle between Cairo 7 and DirecTV, right? It was DirecTV?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was affected by it also. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to watch the game. I have DirecTV. And so the day before, I actually went out and bought myself an over-the-air antenna, like an old-school antenna, which, by the way, is still sitting in my car. I never even took it out, and I didn't bring it back to Best Buy in time, so I wasn't able to get my $20 back, and it's sitting literally in the back of my car. So if you ever need one, I come prepared everywhere I go. But John had some issues, and he started tweeting about it, and it got picked up nationally. And the next thing you know, I mean, everyone and their mother volunteered to help John. Cairo 7 went out to his house. I mean, we know some people over there.
They were like, we can't have you not able to watch the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
This is not going to happen.
John's in the Hall of Fame, as he let everybody know, and it's not possible for him to not watch the Super Bowl. And so, yeah, he got stuff done.
But what does Cairo 7 do when they get there? They had the same issue that he had.
Well, no,
right?
They would have installed the same over-the-air antenna.
Oh, that's what it was. It was right. He just needed that.
Well, I mean, hey, I don't know exactly what he needed. I don't want to step in the middle of it. We all know I'm not a tech whiz either. But I think if we were to get John,
I'm just saying he tweets at these companies, he goes after them, and he gets things done.
Yes.
That's what we need right now.
Yeah,
let's get John to go after Apple. I could see that being very effective. Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you caught what Jerry said there. He said that Julio was on the doorstep. Now, it's too bad. I wish I had done this interview instead of somebody else. I could have followed up and asked what he meant by that. But whoever did the interview obviously didn't think that way, wasn't listening hard enough, or just whatever, you know, went right by him. So what a shame that I wasn't the one doing the interview, because I really would have followed up and said, when you say doorstep, Jerry, what do you mean by that? Does that mean he's on the doorstep of a AAA call-up in order? I mean, he's clearly too good for AA. You heard those numbers. He is too good for that level. He's only been there like half a year, and he's dominated it. So he's too good for AA. A really good interviewer would have said, what do you mean by doorstep? AAA? Or it's not out of the realm of possibility here that with just a couple weeks left in the season, and as Jerry said, kind of needing a miracle for this team to find their way actually to sneak into the playoffs and needing so much help to make that happen, could we see him? Could we see just a debut, just to get his feet wet, just to be up here with the major league team and be around it and see what it looks like?
I mean, people excited to come to that last homestand, all those things.
I hope it wouldn't be for that reason. That is, by the way,
a terrible reason to be. I get it.
I understand your excitement about it. And
I want to see him.
I get it. If Jerry DePoto makes a decision to bring up anybody to sell a ticket, he should be fired on the spot. Seriously. Any general manager who brings up anybody to sell a ticket should be fired on the spot. It's not your job. Manage like a fan, you're going to end up one. General manage like a fan, you're going to end up one. That's Terry Francona taught me, and I will 100% believe that till the day I die. You cannot do anything to appease fans. But if you think it's the right thing to do for his development, if you think it would be good for him to come up and just get a taste of what it looks like up here, I'm not, like, not in favor of that. I wouldn't mind seeing, like, an at-bat or two just to see what it looks like, just to see whether or not he has the baseball. We know he's got the ability, but does he have some of the baseball acumen that takes a lot of time to develop? Hey, maybe he comes up and sees it's hard. He's like, okay, man, it's hard up here. Now head back down, young fella, and we'll see what you do next year. You'll probably start the year in AAA, and we'll see when you're ready for the call-up to the bigs. But you at least know what you're looking at and how hard it's going to be. I wouldn't mind if he had a little taste of that.
When do the expanded rosters happen, and how
they
many?
Happens. Yeah,
so, that, and how many do we happen. Get?
They didn't get as many as they used to. They used to get anybody in the 40 man. You could bring them up. Now they get like two or three players.
Oh, okay.
It's not the same as it used to be when you could, and for good reason. I understand why they made the change. In September games, you could bring in 12 different relievers over the course of the game, and everybody, you could pinch hit. Like, it was a different version of baseball than what was being played for the rest of the year. So, you know, the original idea of it was to give some of these young players a look. Well, the Mariners might now have a chance to do that with Julio. So, I don't know. I'm not opposed to it. If Jerry wants to take just a little peek and see what Julio has, because that has been part of their goal this year, right? We'll talk a little bit more about it in depth later. But I was asking that question. You guys can answer it. 710-710, powered by Mac and Jacks. Do you think the Mariners went? Well, I know they didn't. Should the Mariners have gone all in on trying to make the playoffs this year? Should they have tried harder to make the playoffs? When you hear things like Scott saying this,
certainly not what we were hoping in this series, but the effort level, the experience that we are gaining is going to go a long ways to help us in the future. So we'll regroup, need an off day tomorrow in Kansas City. And, you know, doesn't look too bright right now, but we are not eliminated. We will continue to compete. We're going to need help. There's no question about that. But, you know, we need an off day and we'll go from there.
Yeah, they got that off day yesterday. They're back at it now tonight. That was from a couple days ago. But, you know, you hear Scott saying it, right? I mean, they're developing people, the experience they get. You heard Jerry say it a few minutes ago. Developing these kids and the experience they get has value. Do you believe that it has enough value to have played them as much as they did this year? Or should they have, and I'll put this sort of in quotes, tried harder, so to speak, to make the playoffs this year?
Sorry to go back to the point you talked about bringing Julio up. He did tease at one point the whole possibly bringing Brash into the bullpen. Mm-hmm. So I
found myself thinking about him yesterday, by the way. Brash made his last start at AA yesterday and was really good again. And I just found myself thinking, like, gosh, the way that Red Sox game ended with Eric Swanson and Justice Sheffield, right? Like, I don't know. Would you have rather trusted Matt Brash, who most of us have never seen? I mean, like, I've seen some clips of the slider. It looks pretty filthy. I know he throws hard. He's never really been a reliever. I guess maybe he was a reliever. I don't know. He's a starter now. But would you have minded seeing Matt Brash in that spot instead of Eric Swanson? I know sometimes the devil you don't know seems better than the devil you know.
Thank you for saying that.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of how it seems to me as a fan. I can understand why Jerry and Scott maybe don't feel that way. Like, hey, we've established something with Eric Swanson, et cetera. But I don't trust Eric Swanson. Sorry, I don't trust that guy as far as I could throw him. He's had a couple decent outings this year, but I don't trust Eric Swanson. Would I have minded seeing Matt Brash in that spot? No, but I'm sure there's a good reason why we didn't.
You're just in love with Matt Brash.
Well, I think that's fair.
Text from the 206. If the goal is to make the playoffs and win the World Series, then go for it. But if the goal is to make the wild card and that's it, stay the course.
I think the opposite is the case. I think you have that backwards. And that's why my answer would have been no. They should not have tried any harder to make the playoffs, at least during the season. You have to give everybody opportunities to hit. You have to give Kelnick the at-bats. It's going to pay dividends down the road. Eventually, you need to have the rookie at-bats so that he can later have the better at-bats, right? And don't you want to see the better at-bats when you have that realistic chance here coming up? The argument to be made, there's two arguments you can make against my point. One, well, you don't know, this is the last year of Kyle Seager. You only got one more year of Mitch Haniger, at least in the current deal. You know, if you want to win, now was the year before you move on from that. But I just think you're going to be able to spend that money better and find something better than Kyle Seager next year. So I don't buy that argument. The other one would be you should have done more in the offseason. And I will buy that one in some capacity, at least in pitching. Well, you needed one more starting pitcher. And they could have gone out and gotten one, and they didn't. Instead of choosing between James Paxton and Taijuan Walker, you could add both. It wasn't that much more money. They could have done it. And, oh, by the way, if you were going to decide between the two, you got to take the guy who doesn't get hurt tripping over a sprinkler head or whatever. I mean, like, I love James Paxton. Great guy, but legitimately injury prone. And it's not exactly a shock that the guy blew out his elbow and didn't pitch this year. He is injury prone. That's like his defining characteristic.
I saw Heaps getting in some Twitter spats with the Seager option.
Really?
And like, oh, it's too expensive. It's $20 million. I was like, well, that doesn't mean he is going to... We could still maybe get him for 12. or 12 or 13 was Jake's point.
Who like if gonna... they re-signed him yes. rather than pick yes. up the option? No chance.
So you could decline his option
yeah,
and offer him something. Where else is he going for that kind of money?
He just won't come here.
Okay.
If you decline the option, Kyle Seager will go somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, he's still a player that other teams would value, right? I mean, if you're a team that's, he hit 30 home runs this year. It's not like he's toast. He hit 30 home runs this year. He plays gold glove caliber third base. You don't think there's a market for that? There absolutely is. It might not be at the $20 million mark, but it's probably higher than 12 or 13. Even if it's 15, he'll go do that somewhere else. That would be my guess.
253, we definitely shouldn't have tried harder. The asking price for the players and the deadline are way too high. I don't want to see our top prospects leveraged for a rental.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I'm right there with you. I think they tried the right amount. They're threading the needle. They're getting guys experience all the while, doing the best they can while keeping their eyes on the prize to get as close as they could possibly be and hopefully get in. Unfortunately, they fell a little bit short, or at least that's what it seems like, after losing those two games against the Red Sox. All right, we'll talk a little bit more Mariners later in the show. I want to get back to the Seahawks, though, as we get ready here for crowds to be back in action. And also, I'll ask you this question. I'll answer it, too. If you could choose one thing and one thing only from Sunday's game against the Colts to be real, something you saw that you get to have it be real, what would it be? You can text that answer at 710-710. We'll answer it ourselves next. The Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.